Cheese. Recorded live.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you all for participating in this 12-hour marathon of instruction. I guess it's kind of similar to when the Hebrews of old had to listen to the law of Moses being read during the Feast of Tabernacles. And a matter of fact, today, according to the solar calendar, today is the last great day of the Feast of Tabernacles. And so it was a chore, I'm sure, for many of the Hebrews of that time to have to listen to the law, the entire law being read to them so that they know it and understand it. So there's no excuse for anybody who is a lawbreaker in Israel, right? There should be no excuse.
Today our people won't even listen to a single parable of Jesus being taught.
That's right, yeah, and they think he's a Jew.
Right? They'd rather stay home and watch American Idol.
Yeah, right. Or some football game or the baseball playoffs or what have you, you know. So this is a challenge to those of us in Christian Israel to be true to our faith and place Yahweh in first place. You know, that's the first commandment. I am the Lord thy God. I am Yahweh your God. You shall have no other gods before me. So that's what we're doing here, folks. And the Jews in vain try to redefine our religion as some sort of Trinitarian or some sort of dualism, with their abomination called the Noahide laws, which do not exist in the scriptures, which, again, is a Jewish invention. And we here in Christian Identity demand of our Christian fellows, the white Christian, the Caucasian fellows, to get the heck out of Judaism, get the heck out of Judeo-Christianity. That's an abomination. Those religions do not practice Christianity at all. What they do is they establish, contrary to what Bill was talking about in the last 2 hours, they establish an official religion directly opposed to the First Amendment. And they've done it through the 501c3, tax-exempt status. That's what they've done, folks. In spite of the Constitution, they have established a false version of Christianity in this land.
And they call it Judeo-Christianity.
Right. Right, and of course there is no such thing. It's like saying good, evil, good and evil.
They're like saying the satanic kingdom of God.
That's right.
They've usurped the seat of Moses.
Yes, they most certainly have, okay? So thank Yahweh that we are back, we are Israelites becoming aware of who we really are and that, we reject all of these attempts by the Jews and the Judeo-Christians to prevent our freedom of religion and to prevent our freedom of speech. They have not totally succeeded. It looks really bad, doesn't it, Brian? It looks really bad that this has been taking place, and we've been if we're not in lockstep with the likes of John Hagee or Jerry Falswell or Joyce Meyer or Joel Osteen, that we're not real Christians according to them. Well, on the contrary, they're the false Christians. They're the false priests. They're teaching doctrine that is not contained in the Bible. And we are, and praise Yahweh for the First and Second Amendments, which have kept those forces under control. So praise Yahweh for that.
Sure.
Yes. Now,
they think they have a monopoly on scriptural knowledge.
Yeah, and they don't know it at all. They rarely refer to the scriptures that we routinely quote.
What was it? Isaiah said, "Woe unto them that put good for evil, evil for good, bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter."
That's right.
Light for darkness and darkness for night. They're an inversion.
That's right. They have inverted. And again, it's the prophecy of Paul in both 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and I think 1 Timothy 4, where he said, "In the latter days, there will be a great turning away from the true faith." And aren't we witnesses to that?
Well, they point to the fact that Pentecostals say we have 500 million members. Look how strong we are. You Christian Israelites, you Identists, you only have tens of thousands. Well, it didn't say tens of thousands would fall away.
That's right. It said the whole world will be deceived and only the elect, as we quoted earlier, I think in the first show from Isaiah, that only a tenth will be preserved. So all of these broad, the broad is the path to destruction. Narrow is the gate that leads to salvation.
And
so, Yes, go ahead.
They claim the hunger for the truth. They claim they want to see things and prophesy,
yeah.
but they haven't been, their eyes and ears have not been blessed. They
right,
haven't been open.
Right. Well, the scriptures say, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And none of these Judeo-Christian churches have any interest in knowledge. It's a feel-good religion. Anybody can join despite the covenants, okay? Anybody can be a Christian according to their definition of believer. And, of course, the Bible says, no, only the covenant people can be Christians. It's our religion. It doesn't belong to anybody else. And we can't share what Yahweh promised to us with the other people. They're not capable of doing with it what only true Israel can do with it.
And I get the idea people such as Paul, Peter, and Matthew were, of course, they were literate in a time when probably 95% of their peers were illiterate, and they were most certainly versed in the classics and in current events and in geopolitics. Most Christians today have no knowledge of that, and for that matter, they have no knowledge of Scripture or Gospel.
Yeah, yeah, they claim to have knowledge, but they don't. And since they have a monopoly on the airwaves and on the pulpits, they have been able to get away with their lies. But Christian identity stands as a rebuke to all their lies. And we have challenged them repeatedly. We have challenged them to come on our shows and debate Scripture. Prove that our covenant theology is false. Prove your dispensationalism is correct. Show us the verses that you cite, and we'll tell you how they've been mistranslated or misrepresented by the very churches who promote racial integration and multiculturalism, etc.
Well, there's two problems with your debate offer. The first one is that it interferes with their football game. They don't want to come on. And the second one is they don't want to come on and get embarrassed and proven wrong.
That's right. Exactly right. You know, it might interfere with their pancake breakfast and their pork chop dinner, right? So I'd like to start today's discussion. And the subject is the Judean parallels. The Judean parallels is a comparison of how America has been subverted and how our institutions have been taken over by Edomites, who today go by the name of Jews. And the vast majority of today's Jews are not, and not even from ancient Palestine. The vast majority of today's Jews are Khazars, by their own admission, who had not had a single Shemitic ancestor in their bloodstream. Okay? They admit this. Okay? And in the Jewish encyclopedias, they will admit that up to 90% of modern-day Jews are not the descendants of those Jews who came from ancient Palestine. But even those Jews are Edomites, not Judahites.
And it makes some sense that the Jews converted the Khazar tribe so they could intermingle with them.
That's right. That's right, because they don't believe in separatism. The Jewish people are the foremost promoters of racial integration, primarily to destroy our race through Israel. That's why they promote that nonsense.
I had heard the Khazars were a great warrior people who were much feared throughout the entire region of Central Asia. They were notorious.
Yes, they were.
So that's probably why the Jews wanted to get into that bloodline.
Exactly, exactly. And I think Bill, I think it was a couple of nights ago, we talked about Henry Graetz. I may have the first name wrong, but Professor Graetz, a Jewish professor of history, admits that the Khazars were converted to Judaism, and though they were not the original Jewish people, right? So what we're talking about here is another tremendous great fraud. The claim by the Jews that they are the Israelites of the Bible is nothing but a 2,000-year-old fraud. And we're going to document that today. And it's by pretending to be Israel that they were able to worm their way into the government of the House of Judah, take it over. And today, what do? They pretend to be Americans.
Well, they're always pretending.
That's right.
They pretend to be Christians when it suits them, like Tony Alamo Ministries, better known as his birth name, Bernie Lazar Hoffman.
Bernie Lazar Hoffman. And Calvin. Calvin, his real name was Cohen, right? So we have numerous crypto-Jews masquerading as Catholic priests during the days of the Inquisition, right? Then they immediately began to masquerade as Protestant ministers, a la Calvin Cohen, right?
Well, sure. As soon as the Catholic Church lost its monopoly on European Christianity, it suited them to get in on the Reformation from the beginning.
Right, and Martin Luther was hip to the game that they were playing because he did accept support from the Jews initially because, you know, they saw he was attacking the Catholic Church, and they wanted to destroy the Catholic monarchies anyway, you know. That's why they supported Martin Luther. But then Martin Luther came to realize they were doing it for their own deceptive purposes, not for Christian purposes, you know, and that's why he wrote The Jews and Their Lies. Now, how many fundamentalist Christians of the Lutheran sort are even aware that Martin Luther wrote a book by that title?
If you told them, they'd chase you out of their church.
That's right. They wouldn't be Protestants anymore, would they? They'd be protesting the Protestant movement, right? Good. So I want to set up the history of ancient Judea by quoting Josephus. And Josephus is probably, along with the Apocrypha that were contained in the original King James Bible, that those Apocrypha give us a tremendous amount of history between the return from Babylon of the true house of Judah and the trials and tribulations of the Maccabees, Judas Maccabee. I'm going to be quoting about Judas Maccabeus right here. And, you know, their successors who were adamantly trying to preserve their people. In the Old Testament, the word salvation simply means the preservation of the people of Israel, their physical preservation. That's what the word salvation in the Old Testament means. And it really doesn't change in the New Testament because the physical preservation of the covenant people is absolutely necessary for the establishment of the kingdom. That's when we will regain our restored, light-bearing, Holy Spirit-infused bodies, which cannot be destroyed. Okay? Our physical preservation is guaranteed throughout Scripture.
When people spiritualize everything.
They spiritualize this so that they can teach that when we die, we go to heaven. No. We will see heaven coming down to earth. The New Jerusalem will come right down here to earth, and it will be overseen by the 12 tribes of Israel, Revelation chapter 21.
John the Baptist kept saying, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and
right.
Jesus kept saying that. That was basically one of the cornerstones of his ministry. He didn't say, repent, for you're soon going to be in some place in the clouds.
That's right. He didn't say that. The kingdom. What's the kingdom? It's the physical preservation of the Israelites with our dominion that was actually promised to us way back in Genesis chapter 1.
And if I say, Eli's arrival is at hand, and all these people are wondering, gee, are we going to meet with him, or is he coming to meet with us?
Right, right. And even that expression, to meet with Jesus and the saints in the clouds, and that expression, clouds, means numbers, great numbers of people.
Sure.
That's what it means. Okay.
If I meet you at the airport, that doesn't mean I'm going to get on the plane and leave with you.
That's
likely
right.
Means that you're going to be right. Coming in a taxi cab with me somewhere.
Yeah, although if it's a flying saucer, some of our people may just get on, right?
These people think they're going to meet Jesus in the clouds and they're going to depart with him for some spaceship.
That's right. Okay, I'm going to quote here from the Antiquities of the Judahites. That's the correct title of the works of Josephus here, the Antiquities of the Judahites. And book 12, chapter 9, paragraph 7. And here Josephus is talking about the days in which Antiochus Epiphanes invaded the land of Judah and created all kinds of turmoil among the people there. And I'd say the reason why all this turmoil was allowed by Yahweh was because the various aspirants toward the priesthood, many of them being illegitimate, were warring among themselves, and the kings of Judah were rather lax in making sure that the laws of Yahweh were being obeyed. Okay?
And this has frequently happened. This is a constant occurrence.
It's happened over and over again in our history, and as Pastor Greg said earlier, it's because we refuse to obey his laws that Yahweh chooses to punish us in these various ways. Okay.
Well, when our people get blessed, they think that the blessings are basically the fruit of their own labor. They think it's the work of their own hands. They don't say, wow, Yahweh has blessed us. We are fortunate. They say, look at all these good things we've made happen for ourselves.
That's right. We pat ourselves on the back, and we're such good Christians because we're not racist and everything's going so well. Excuse me, what's going well?
Although when bad things happen, they say, why does God allow bad things to happen?
Yeah,
well,
it's because
he doesn't allow
good.
Bad things to happen. He makes the bad things happen.
Right.
That's because they don't appreciate the good things. They take credit for the good things.
Well, yeah, the way the Jews like to put it is, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, you're assuming that you're good. Okay. you're actually evil and you're being punished for your evil. That's why bad things happen to you. Okay? Now, again, paragraph 7. So we're talking of Antiochus the king who invaded Judah. Accordingly, the king sent to Judas, and that's Judas Maccabeus, and to those that were besieged with him, and promised to give them peace and permit them to make use of and live according to the laws of their fathers. In other words, the Maccabeans were trying to live according to the laws of Yahweh, according to the laws of Moses, okay? And they gladly received his proposals. Yeah, they would have an end to and cessation to war, okay?
They're certainly not Jews if they're trying to live by the law of Moses.
Exactly. And when they had gained security upon oath for their performance, they went out of the temple. But when Antiochus came into it and saw how strong the place was, he broke his oaths and ordered his army that was there to pluck down the walls to the ground. And when he had so done, he returned to Antioch. He also carried with him Onias, the high priest, who was also called Menelaus. For Lysias advised the king to slay Menelaus if he would have the Judeans or Judahites be quiet and cause him no further disturbance. So in other words, the ones who were trying to reestablish the laws of Yahweh, his advisor told Antiochus would be an impediment to his rule. So he must kill the ones who are loyal. Be quiet and cause him no further disturbance, for that this man was the origin of all the mischief of the Judahites had done them by persuading his father to compel the Judahites to leave the religion of their father. So what we're talking about, there was insurrection and dispute among the Judahites themselves as to which priests to follow. Okay, and there were good priests and evil priests. And, of course, whenever an invading army comes in, well, they're going to back the priest who's going to disrupt, divide,
sure,
and conquer the indigenous population. Right?
They're a fifth column.
Yes,
like
exactly.
The World Council on Churches types, they sap the moral strength of the nation from within and make it ripe for the foreign foe.
Yeah. Okay, and so it continues. So the king sent Menelaus to Berea, a city of Syria, and had him put to death when he had been high priest 10 years. He had been a wicked and impious man, and in order to get the government to himself, had compelled his nation to transgress their own laws, as our modern Judeo-Christian ministries are doing today, right?
That's what the law says, doesn't it? It says if any man claims to be a prophet or a priest or a preacher or anything, and then he tries to lead the people away, even if he's performed miracles first, you're to slay him because he's not of Yahweh.
Right. And so all these evil priests, these priests that Yahweh himself hates because they're false prophets, have taken over the religion called Christianity. And continuing here, after the death of Menelaus, Alcimus, who was also called Jachimus, was made high priest. But when King Antiochus found that Philip had already possessed himself of the government, he made war against him and subdued him and took him and slew him. Now as to Onias, the son of the high priest, who, as we before informed you, was left a child when his father died, when he saw that the king had slain his uncle Menelaus and gave the high priesthood to Alcimus, who was not of the high priest's stock, but was induced by Lysias to translate that dignity from his family to another house, he fled to Ptolemy, king of Egypt, and etc., etc. So we see that in the house of Judah, there were aspirants to the title of high priest who were illegitimate, okay? And the Judahites were actually killing each other, and some of them would make league with the Greeks under Antiochus, others would make leagues with the Romans, you know, under Caesar. And what ultimately happened was that, given all this turmoil among our own people for their refusal to obey Yahweh's laws, invaders were allowed to judge them, as Yahweh has always done with invading armies. He has judged our people by bringing in invading armies to punish our disobedience, okay? One of the consequences of this was that Antipater, who was an Edomite, was made a league with John Hyrcanus, who was the last full-blooded Judahite to rule on his own.
And is he the one whose reign saw the conquest of Idumea?
Right, yes. During his reign, he subdued the nation of Idumea, the Edomites, okay, and in total violation of Yahweh's laws, arranged to have those Edomites circumcised so that they could become citizens of Judea, okay? And so, in other words, the house of Judah or the kingdom of Judah merged with the Edomite Canaanite kingdom called Idumea.
So he thought he was swallowing them up, but they swallowed him up.
Right, and that's what, whenever we invite Edomites into our country, they take advantage of that situation to finagle their way into positions of trust in order to destroy us. Okay? So, and of course, this is a violation of Deuteronomy chapter 7. You read Deuteronomy chapter 7, it will tell you that we are not to make covenants with Canaanites. We're not to make marriages with them. We have, are to have nothing to do with them.
Certainly. Wasn't it I forget the name of the sister. Was it Dina, the sister of Simeon and Levi, who was raped by the Canaanite prince? And then he said, give your son.
No, I'm on the air.
My daughters to your sons, they simply descended on the city and wiped it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so whenever we make a league with non-Israelite people, and it even goes back to the days of Jeremiah having prohibited the Israelites to make a league with the Egyptians against the Babylonians, Jeremiah said, well, Yahweh is taking you off into captivity for your own good. So you should submit to Yahweh's judgments and not rebel against Yahweh's judgments. Right? So what we have happening today is virtually a repeat of what happened in ancient Judea. And so what I'd like to establish is that in America, along the lines of what happened with Antipater, Antipater became the advisor to John Hyrcanus. He basically provided money for John Hyrcanus in his various wartime efforts, right? And that, and Antipater went to Julius Caesar and bribed Julius Caesar to become a proponent or a backer of the Judahites against the Greeks. Okay? But this is how the Jews finagled their way into our company, by pretending to help us. And actually what happened, it made Judah the battleground between the Greeks and the Romans, thereby putting our people in great, great jeopardy, okay? And so Antipater's son was named Herod, and Herod and John Hyrcanus had a league. They shared power. Julius Caesar made Herod the governor of Galilee, while John Hyrcanus was in power in Judea, okay? But the final blow, the fatal blow for the kingdom of Judah was when John Hyrcanus militarily defeated the Edomites and then accepted them into our company, which we're forbidden to do, accepting them as citizens of Judea. Now, this did not make them Israelites, okay? You cannot convert to Israel, okay? You can convert to a religion, but you cannot convert to a different nationality. It's not possible, right?
Isn't that what Jeremiah said? Can the leopard change his spots? Can the Ethiopian change his skin? How then can you, accustomed to doing evil, do good?
That's right. That's right. And that's why we're not to bring those people into our nations, because they will simply debauch and destroy our nations.
So we're having, as you said, a Babylonian captivity, but I would say it's only a Babylonian captivity of sorts. Since we're not being taken away, we're importing the people who are holding us captive here.
That's right. We're importing our own debauchery. And typically, and the Bible says numerous times that whenever we allow people who have different cultures and religions into our company, our people invariably convert to those cultures and religions. Just look at white kids, listening to rap music.
And they all want to be Buddhists.
Right, yeah, Buddhists, Hindus, what have you. So the attempts by the so-called Christian churches to convert the other peoples, other races to our religion always fail.
They have to convert the world, and the world has converted them.
Exactly. We are being converted to heathenism. It's not the other way around. Christianity never works with other cultures and races. Never. Absolutely never works. And you'd think they'd learn from history, but they don't. Because this has happened time and time again. Whenever we try to convert the other races to Christianity, we wind up becoming heathenized and adopting their religious doctrines. You see the modern churches having voodoo and Wicca and Maya, New Age religion. These crazy doctrines are being allowed into the so-called Christian churches, And the Christian people are saying, oh, that's interesting. Right?
They've universalized.
Yeah, they universalized Christianity instead of making Christianity, keeping Christianity pure. That's always what happens, okay?
They don't want to hurt the feelings of the heathen.
That's right. And that's what the modern churches teach you. You shouldn't offend the non-whites by condemning their practices, right? Instead, we should imitate them. We should imitate the homosexuals and the feminists.
And
right?
It's all about nominal numbers.
Yes, it's all about numbers. It's a numbers game. And it's become money. It's become all about money.
It doesn't matter to them if they...
It's money and numbers, yeah.
500 million members, even if half of those members are warlords and rapists and cannibals in Africa.
Exactly, exactly. And the Christian, the so-called Christians, are allowing all this to happen, turning a blind eye to it and pretending that it'll all get better if we just keep not offending them, right? But isn't this what Paul is saying when he says, be not ashamed of your faith? These people are totally ashamed of Christianity because they're allowing other religions to run roughshod over true Christianity. Okay.
Well, certainly they're universalists, but they're even to the point where they won't even say you need Jesus to be saved. They'll say, oh, if you're just a good person, you don't need Jesus, even though Jesus said that he's the only way to salvation.
Right. That's right. Well, that's what John Hagee teaches. He says the Jews have their own path to salvation, right? That's not scriptural. That's a total lie.
According to Hagee.
Right. It's Christianity according to John. Again, it's Judeo-Christianity, which is an oxymoron. There is no such thing. You can't combine hatred of Christ with worship of Christ. It's just not possible.
You need to make your pick and go with it.
That's right. So what happens then is you choose the doctrines that are acceptable to you and go with those, and you disregard the rest. But that's not Christianity. Christianity is Old and New Testament, and those two books confirm each other and conform to each other. They do not contradict each other.
I'd rather people like Hagee just come right out and be open, overt Baal worshippers and stop making a pretense to loving Christ.
Well, right. Well, if he did that, then he would expose himself. He's not about to do that, right?
Isn't that what Elijah said to the Israelites? How long will you be torn in two directions, either worship God or worship Baal?
Right. And Joshua said the same thing. So the first interloper into the house of Judah, thanks to John Hyrcanus, was Herod. And when John Hyrcanus died, Herod became the official leader, although he was not of the house of Judah at all. But he was recognized by the Roman army because the Romans didn't make any distinction between Judahites and Edomites. Okay, they just wanted control of the whole region, whoever the leader was, and Herod was their official a representative in the area. He was even trained in Rome. His father Antipater sent him and his brother Archelaus, I can't remember the exact name of his brother right now, but they were both educated in Rome, so they were Romans, okay? And then they came back under the auspices of Antipater to take control of the house of Judah, okay? Now, this process began in America in similar fashion, and I know you're familiar with this history, so I will simply ask you, who was Woodrow Wilson's Jewish advisor? Do you remember? He wrote a book promoting communism.
Who was this again?
Okay, Woodrow Wilson's personal advisor.
Oh, Metalhouse.
Yes, Colonel.
Was it Philip Drew Administrator?
Exactly, which is promoted communism.
And I believe Gerald has a first edition original copy of the book, and they claim today that the book doesn't exist and that it's an anti-Semitic hoax.
I have a copy of it. Yeah. It was written by Colonel House.
I think he wrote it in 1911 or 1912, but they're trying to claim that no copy from before 1918 exists and it's just an anti-Semitic fable.
Right.
That anti-Semites published a book in 1918 in the guy's name or something, but Gerald has the original first run copy.
Yes.
By Mendelhaus.
Yeah, I certainly do have a copy of it, and it is a document that promotes Jewish communism, simply no doubt about it, okay, and promotes the use of America's institutions to accomplish that effect.
Mendelhaus was basically Wilson's Rahm Emanuel.
That's right. and he was in the employ of the House of Rothschild, okay, and he helped guide Woodrow Wilson into World War I on behalf of the House of Rothschild, okay. So we see a great similarity. Antipater guiding the House of Judah into an allegiance with Rome against the Greeks, right? And here we have Rothschild utilizing Colonel Edward Mandel House into an allegiance with Britain against the Germans, right?
It's that age-old intrigue.
Age-old intrigue from behind the scenes. And guess who's doing the money lending to both sides?
The Rothschilds.
The Rothschilds. And, of course, in those days, the Babylonians, the Edomites of Babylonia, of Idumea, were in constant touch with the money lenders of ancient Babylonia. And that's where the Jewish, it wasn't called Judaism just yet. It wasn't called Judaism until the Edomites began usurping the laws of Moses, claiming that they wrote the laws of Moses and that they were the Israelites. Judaism is that false religion that claims to have antiquity in the books of the Old Testament. Okay,
wasn't it originally just the traditions of the Pharisees?
That's right, right, and that's how Jesus Christ defined Judaism of its time, the tradition of the elders.
And when he condemned those elders, he was not condemning the elders of Israel. And
no.
People say he was some young revolutionary condemning his own elders. No, he was condemning the usurpious elders.
That's right. The usurpers who were the Edomites that John Hyrcanus had brought in had usurped religion in Judea just as they have usurped religion in America, because there was no such thing as Judeo-Christianity until these Jewish usurpers invented the term sometime in the mid-30s, okay, and began promoting the works of Schofield and others who were promoting this idea that the Jews are the Old Testament Israelites and that Christians need to worship the Jews simply because they're the Old Testament Israelites. Well, neither of those things is true.
They themselves are the Old Testament Israelites, not the evil.
We are, yes.
Worshiping.
Our people are.
Certainly, they wouldn't even acknowledge that they have some special covenant relationship with God. They'd say that all you need is belief in Jesus, but the Jews have their own path because they're special. Well, why don't they just convert to Judaism then and keep believing in Jesus so they get a finger in each pie?
Right, right. And so, but they're always playing both ends against the middle. The Jews have always done this historically, and the way they get into the good graces of a particular government or king is by pretending to be your friend against the enemy, right? But what our kings don't perceive is that they have already financed the enemy's army and put us in this perilous position just so that they can take advantage of us.
They come along and say, "Oy vey, your majesty, your enemies are mustering forces."
Yes, right.
Or they don't mention that they finance the mustering.
Exactly, exactly.
They finance the arms buildup, and they say, "Oy vey, if you wish to play catch-up, we can help you with the financing."
Yes, yes. And in Woodrow Wilson's case, they took advantage of the fact that he had had an affair with a certain Boston socialite by the name of Mary Peck, okay? And earlier, before the war issue became very upfront, they bribed, actually blackmailed Woodrow Wilson into getting Louis Brandeis installed in the Supreme Court, because if he had not done so, they would have exposed him as both a womanizer and as an adulterer, because he was seeing this woman on the side while he was married, you know, to his current wife.
Better to be exposed and answer for what you've done than to betray your people and damn the whole nation, though.
That's right. So they got Louis Brandeis on the Supreme Court through this blackmail.
If he were the sort of person who would rather be exposed and face the consequences, he would have had the character and quality not to do it to begin with.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And Mary Peck was also married. So it was two married individuals committing adultery. And Woodrow Wilson, while he was, I think, president of Yale or Harvard, I forget which college he was president of, that these things were happening. And at this time, the Jews were prepping him to run for president. Okay?
Was she a Jew?
Woodrow? Well,
no, Mary Pack.
No, I don't think so. No.
It seems they used one of their women to entrap a goyim.
Well, that's often the case, but I think this was just he was more or less the Bill Clinton of his day, right? He chased after skirts, right? And as Hillary well knows, right? So he was kind of like an early version of Bill Clinton, chasing after skirts while being
back then he would have been chasing dresses. I don't think they wore skirts.
Right? Yeah, chasing bloomers, right? But in those days, that was very scandalous. You know, Bill Clinton got away with it because times had changed in the last 100 years, right?
No one cared. Where even, I imagine, 40 or 50 years ago, if your party knew you had an affair, they'd expect you to resign.
That's right.
Even if it wasn't public knowledge, since they didn't want it to become public knowledge, right. And have to deal with the file. And if it were public knowledge, they'd disown you.
Right. And the newspapers in the West, you know, the Republican West, were publishing stories about this affair, okay? But the newspapers of the East, which were controlled by the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, would refuse to publish these stories. So half the country knew and the other half didn't. And when it came election time, they actually promoted Theodore Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party to run against the Republicans. And I think it was the great religious leader,
William Jennings Bryan.
William Jennings Bryan.
One?
Yes. And who would have been the sole Republican candidate against Woodrow Wilson. Wilson wouldn't have had a chance against William Jennings Bryan. But the Rothschilds promoted the Bull Moose Party, led by Theodore Roosevelt, to split the Republican vote.
In 1912, the major candidates were Wilson for the Democrats, Roosevelt for the Progressive Party, and Taft for a Republican. And Taft only managed to win the state of Utah. He only won Vermont, too. Taft won Utah and Vermont.
Yes. So they implemented this tactic of splitting the conservative vote in order to get a liberal elected. And that's what Wilson was. Wilson was definitely a liberal. And, you know, he made a lot of Christian-sounding rhetoric, as we get from the pulpits today.
Is he sleeping with his neighbor's wife?
Exactly. And so since the modern Christians preach that the law has been done away with, they can get away with anything, right? So they're basically doing as they please, pretending to be Christians, calling themselves Christian, when in fact they're evil vipers, and many of them being in the employ of the Jewish establishment. So Colonel Edward Mandel House was Woodrow Wilson's advisor. We got our first Jewish Supreme Court justice as a result of this blackmail. And then it was Brandeis who encouraged America to get into World War One.
And I'm actually reading from my high school history textbook on American history, and it doesn't mention anything about his infidelity. It says that he was somewhat of an arrogant intellectual, highly principled man, and then it said that he battled the bankers building on legislation from that came about after the panic of 1907 with the National Banking Act that had been decades old, and he went after, quote, the triple wall of privilege, saying that there was inadequate banking regulations. Well, you just create regulations under the pretense. You create an SEC or whatever it is you create, and all it is, you know, Murray, who's tasked with watching Herschel.
Well, it's totally repugnant to even suggest that Woodrow Wilson was opposed to the bankers. He's the one who signed the Federal Reserve Act. He's the one who signed the IRS Act. He's the one who signed the Tax-Exempt Corporations Act. He did nothing except what his Jewish handlers asked him to do. Okay, and that's the bottom line. So that's just this information, you know. And he was by no means a populist. He was by no means a friend of America. He was nothing but a Jewish puppet. That's all he was. Okay, and so the proof of that goes, you know, after World War One. In fact, you know, that they staged this attack against Germany based on the Lusitania event, which had happened well before we actually got involved in the hostilities in Europe. And the German government.
Munitions.
Yes. Yeah. And the German government took ads out saying we're going to attack this ship called the Lusitania because it contains war material, and that's in violation of America's neutrality.
Well, here, can I read just a paragraph from this textbook?
Sure.
Again, appealing to the sovereign people, Wilson scored another triumph. In 1913, he signed the epical Federal Reserve Act, the most important piece of economical legislation, economic legislation between the Civil War and the New Deal. The new Federal Reserve Board, appointed by the president, oversaw a nationwide system of 12 regional reserve districts, each with its own central bank. Although these regional banks were actually bankers' banks owned by member financial institutions, the final authority of the Federal Reserve Board guaranteed a substantial measure of public control. The board was also empowered to issue paper money, Federal Reserve notes, backed by commercial paper such as promissory notes of business people. Thus, the amount of money in circulation could be swiftly increased as needed for the legitimate requirements of business. The Federal Reserve Act was a red-letter achievement. It carried the nation with flying banners through the financial crisis of 1914 to 1918. Without
wow.
it, the Republic's progress toward the modern economic age would have been seriously retarded. So they're basically saying that without the Federal Reserve, we wouldn't have the country we have. That's right. We'd have a republic.
Yeah, we'd have our country. It wouldn't belong to the Jewish moneylenders. Right.
Legitimate businesses.
Yeah, and so you can see whoever wrote that textbook was nothing but another puppet for the Jews, you know. And it's very obvious that the Federal Reserve created panics and depressions, you know, time after time after time, either by inflating the money supply or withdrawing the money supply. Okay? So the whole premise of instituting a Federal Reserve Act was to stabilize the economy. But you can't stabilize the economy with paper money controlled by foreigners from Germany, Holland, Britain, etc. All of them being Jewish banking families. Okay? There's no way you can stabilize the economy when you put the economy in the hands of those people. But that's what the Federal Reserve Act did. Now, to prove that Woodrow Wilson was totally in control of the Wilson White House, after World War I, the Versailles Treaty, okay? And, of course, Woodrow Wilson went to Europe after World War I to great accolades and public displays, you know, and cheering mobs that, you know, he accepted their cheers, you know, as if he had something to do with the salvation of Western civilization. On the contrary, World War I was a victory for the Bolsheviks and the Jewish moneylenders. That's all it was. Because their whole attempt was to try to institute a one-world government called the League of Nations, okay? And
they were just building upon the Congress of Vienna.
That's right.
Which failed.
Yes, yeah, that failed. And the House of Rothschild had tried numerous attempts to institute a one-world government. The Congress of Vienna was first. They tried several in the 1800s. And, you know, right after World War I, the League of Nations was another attempt.
And Congress of Vienna was somewhat successful in Europe, but almost immediately in the decades following, America came onto the scene and became a major power and a player.
Right.
World stage. So they hadn't factored that in, which is why they needed the League of Nations. And when the American people, through the Senate, rebelled against that treaty,
right.
It wasn't going to go anywhere. So they needed a bigger war.
Right. And they wanted, yeah, they needed another war to institute their one-world government, and it's called the United Nations Organization, which was successfully instituted, you know, after World War II.
My textbook also says, too, that the U.S. exported weapons to both sides in 1914 and again in 1915, but by 1916, U.S. was exporting virtually nothing to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Although it
right.
says that U.S. merchantmen and U.S. munitions makers were selling weapons to both sides in the early year of the war.
Right, right. And, you know, the capitalists always sell to, you know, the highest bidder, you know, until they're forced to choose sides, okay? And the Balfour Declaration was what forced the capitalists to back Britain, okay, because the House of Rothschild, through the Balfour Declaration, had decreed, well, we need to have Palestine, we Jews need to have Palestine for us. It is currently under the possession of the Turks and the Germans, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that when we finally win this war and dispossess the Turks and Germans of Palestine, we will take control of Palestine for us. Okay?
Certainly. And
yeah.
My textbook actually has a copy of the ad the Germans took out in
really?
The New York Herald on May 1st, 1915. Notice, Travelers intending to embark on the Atlantic voyage are reminded that a state of war exists between Germany and her allies and
yes.
Great Britain and her allies, that the zone of war includes the waters adjacent to the British Isles, that in accordance with formal notice given by the Imperial German government, vessels flying the flag of Great Britain or any of her allies are liable to destruction in those waters, and that travelers sailing in the war zone on ships of Great Britain or her allies do so at their own peril. And it says, Europe via Liverpool, Lusitania.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on to talk about how they're basically going to sink the ship if they see it.
Right, right.
And the, yeah. And the book actually says that it had 4,200 cases of small arms ammunition
mm-hmm.
stored inside the ship.
Yeah, and that was proven after the war by the submarines, you know, that can go very deep into the ocean. That it did have, indeed, war material destined for the British, and that was a violation of our neutrality treaty at the time. So the Germans were fully in, and of course, I'm amazed that that book has that ad listed. Because very, very few people know about that. And I'm also aware that the State Department issued an order to the various newspapers who were running that ad to take it out. Okay?
And it says that 6 days after this ad was put out in the New York Herald by German embassy officials, the ship was sunk.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So the Germans warned people not to get on that boat. Because America is in violation of the neutrality treaty. So you can't blame the Germans for wanting to prevent the British from getting supplies. Right? And we were doing so on the sly, publicly stating we're neutral, but in reality supplying the British. Okay? So who was the real hypocrite? Who was really in the wrong in this case? It was the Wilson administration. Pretending, and of course, Wilson pretended in his re-election campaign to be anti-war while he was secretly plotting to get into the war. And it's very, he campaigned on the notion that I kept our boys out of the war, and as soon as he won re-election,
he got him right into the war.
He got us right into the war.
And then he said he made the world safe for democracy, safe
right.
for freedom, but he propped up the Bolsheviks.
That's right.
And he praised the Bolsheviks.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And he threatened to declare war on Germany in 1915 and 1916, saying that they were to stop sinking passenger ships without warning. But they were putting warnings in all the newspapers.
Yeah,
and the newspapers
right.
were calling them acts of piracy.
Right, right. Yeah, and so it showed. And of course, the German nation got dragged into the war because of the treaty they had with Austria. And it was really the Austrians and I forget what country. You know, it was the problem.
Austria-Hungary.
Austria-Hungary.
Most of the problems in the Balkans and Bosnia and Serbia.
Right, and that assassination of the Archduke was precipitated by a band of Freemasons.
The Black Hand.
Yeah, working for the Bolsheviks. Yes.
They were armed, equipped, trained, and funded by Serbian military intelligence. And I think there's some evidence. If you look at Gavrilo Princip, the chief assassin. If you look at his picture, he looks like a Jew. He doesn't
okay.
look like any Serbian. Oh,
yeah, most of the European Freemasons were, in fact, Jews. Right. And Freemasonry in Europe had been told. In fact, so was Trotsky. Trotsky was a Freemason. And he admired Freemasonry. So you know, the connection between Judaism and Freemasonry in Europe was very strong. Very strong. Okay. Of course, since the foundation of the Illuminati had sworn to infiltrate Freemasonry and redirect it to Jewish imperialism. Of course, the Freemasons weren't aware of that. Okay, that was all done behind the scenes via the Illuminati. Okay.
You know, when the revolution happened in Russia, Wilson said that the American people, indeed people all around the world, should feel reinforced and reassured that the peace of the world is now almost guaranteed with
yeah.
the overthrow of the despotic czar.
Right. Yeah. And of course, by the word peace, the Jews mean their tyranny, their Antichrist
well,
tyranny.
There will be peace when every single white country has been overthrown or has just buckled under pressure.
Yes. Yes. And so we see in the Wilson administration these Edomites finagling their way into positions of authority. We have Brandeis. And we have various other Jews that were advisors to Woodrow Wilson. I'm trying to think of the name who the guy who became head of the War Department. Another
Morgenthau?
No, he is another one. He was more on the scene during the FDR regime.
Okay.
But
what decade are we talking now?
Well, I'm still talking about the Woodrow Wilson transiting into the FDR regime, okay? And so the Versailles Treaty, I've got reports from journalists who were on the scene saying that it was Colonel House who was actually running all the meetings, and there were a couple of occasions where Woodrow Wilson attempted to be part of the meeting, and Colonel House actually shooed him out of the room, saying, "We don't need you. Get lost." Okay.
How many points was it Wilson had? Was it 14 points?
Yeah. And one of them was self-determination.
Self-determination, which we've never had.
Which we've never had. And, of course, the Jews would not admit, you know, ever allow that.
And supposedly World War One, one of the causes was the issue of Serbian. How did they settle that? They lumped Serbian with the generic, artificially created Yugoslavia, and the Serbs hated that.
Yeah, the Balkanization, guaranteeing future conflict.
Another war. Just like World War II was supposedly over Germany invading Poland, but the Soviets invaded Poland too, but no one declared war on them for it.
Yes, yes.
And at the end of the war, Poland was handed over to the Soviets because Poland was no longer needed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Poles were basically just useful idiots.
Yes, right, that's right. And of course, and for some reason, the Jews hate the Poles almost worse than they hate Germans.
Well, one of the reasons they hate the Poles extended hospitality to them, the Polish government anyway, and took in all the Jews that were expelled from France and Spain and then Germany in the 13th and 14th centuries.
Yeah.
And the Polish people never took to that very well. Poland was, I think, 10% Jewish by the 1500s, and there were frequent pogroms because people hated the Jews.
Right. And the Polish cities were crawling with Jews, and many Polish cities actually had more Jews than Poles. And consequently, you know, and these Poles became tax collectors, lawyers, doctors, you know, kind of like here in America, right? Tax collectors, lawyers, doctors, politicians, right? Bankers, advisors to the leadership of Poland. Same thing here. We have Jewish advisors finagling their way into the various administrations of our presidents and dictating terms through their monetary policy. Right?
If you don't play ball, we cut off all the money flow.
Right. But they have to establish that money flow. Once that money flow is established, then the politicians simply sign on. Okay? And it's no different with our current so-called president today. He's doing the bidding of the Jews without any doubt. Okay? And so when the League of Nations failed, Woodrow Wilson, he resigned. Well, he didn't. I guess he resigned in disgrace. He tried to run one more time, but you know, his career was over, and his 14 points were a failure. The New Deal was later to come through Roosevelt, another Jewish stooge. Okay, Roosevelt exceeded the number of Jewish advisors that were prominent in the Woodrow Wilson administration. Okay. And the number of Jewish advisors in the Wilson administration increased as a result of World War One. Okay? And they were advisors to the government. In fact, I think FDR was Secretary of the Navy, as I recall, during World War One, or Undersecretary.
He was Assistant Secretary of the Navy, and interestingly, Churchill was the Lord of the Admiralty.
Uh-huh. Right. And Churchill was a full-blooded Jew because he had a Jewish mother.
Certainly.
Okay. So here's an article about how the Roosevelt administration, this is Franklin Delano Roosevelt, communist dictator, from the Historical Review Press. And it says, Roosevelt opened the offices of the government as never before to Jews. Henry Morgenthau Jr., Samuel Rosenman, the one who coined the name New Deal, Felix Frankfurter, Benjamin Cohen, David Niles, Anna Rosenberg, Sidney Hillman, and David Dubinsky were among his closest advisors in politics and government. Rabbi Stephen Wise, the preeminent spokesman for American Zionism, and his daughter Justine Polier were personal friends of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt with as much access to the White House as anyone. Okay? And this is quoted from America, Franklin D. Roosevelt and the Holocaust, by William J. Vanden Heuvel, okay? So, continuing here, Roosevelt had served the Jews so well that they were only too glad to aid in securing his nomination to run for a presidential election. The Jewish support for Roosevelt in 1932 was so overwhelming that it seemed almost unanimous. Fuchs, F-U-C-H-S, who has carefully analyzed the balloting in heavily Jewish electoral districts, points out that FDR received 84.7% of the vote in the 20 most Jewish precincts ward of 24 of Chicago. Okay.
Oh, and I found that, I think this name, Bernard Baruch, are you familiar
Bernard
with
Bernard Baruch, yes. Yeah, was
he the one that Wilson appointed?
Yeah, he was the head of the War Board.
Yeah, and, you were mentioning the War Department earlier. Was
right.
The Border War Department.
Right, and Bernard Baruch actually sent defective rifles, which he made a profit on, to the American soldiers in World War One, and a lot of American soldiers died because he sent them defective equipment.
Here's what my textbook says on Bernard Baruch.
Okay.
Late in the war and after some bruising political battles, Wilson succeeded in imposing some order on this economic confusion. In March 1918, he appointed Lone Eagle stock speculator Bernard Baruch to head the War Industries Board.
Yes.
But the War Industries Board never had more than feeble formal powers, and it was disbanded within days after the armistice.
Right. Well, I mean, it was a good vehicle for Bernard Baruch to use the companies that he controlled or was working with to profit for himself and for his Jewish friends.
I'm surprised they would actually identify him as a speculator, since that has negative connotations. They could
right.
have said an entrepreneur.
Right.
Or a venture capitalist.
Yeah. Was he identified as being Jewish in that article?
No, but they identified him as Bernard Baruch. And
right.
He's certainly not an Irishman with that name.
No. That's right. And so it was Bernard Baruch who transited from the Wilson administration and became the chief handler of FDR, okay, which this article doesn't mention Bernard Baruch either. But, we had Felix Frankfurter, we have Henry Morgenthau, we have Bernard Baruch, and, of course, I think this, not this really, the Supreme Court Justice, I think he was still in power, and we have Rabbi Wise, the head of rabbinical Judaism in America. All these people have direct access to FDR.
This book talks about the socialist opposition to the war, and it says that socialist leader Eugene V. Debs spoke out strongly against the war and spent at least a year and several years in prison after he was convicted under the Espionage Act of 1917 for opposing the war. He ran for president in 1920 from his cell and received over a million votes, almost a million votes. And it says, however, Samuel Gompers, the American Federation of Labor, saw to it that there were no strikes in crucial industries. He said that he wasn't going to sabotage America's war effort because he loved America, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He's just some Jewish union guy, and he's using his power to keep the Allied war effort running while his cousins over in Germany are organizing strikes in the munitions factories.
Yes, yes. And so we have, all of these Jews in the Wilson administration, in the FDR administration. Mind you, many of these were not even American citizens. They were born in other countries, came over to America just to be the advisors of Wilson and FDR. Okay? Now, continuing with this article, during the campaign, FDR dispatched Jonathan Horowitz's Jewish grandson, William C. Bullitt, to become the first United States ambassador to the USSR, during the same time that Uncle Sam's twin brother, Uncle Joe Stalin's communist era was resulting in the deaths of 45 million white Ukrainians and Russians. Bullitt was no stranger to the communist oppressor in Europe because he was one of them. Okay? Continuing. In fact, he had worked closely as a liaison officer with them years before his involvement with FDR. Bullitt had been President Wilson's emissary to Lenin, and FDR considered him to be the perfect man for the task of making sure he was buddy-buddy with Stalin. Undoubtedly, William Bullitt had the qualifications that would foot the bill, but this was only the beginning of Bullitt's instigation that would play a major role in leading up to the Second World War. In 1933, FDR became president. He then imposed the New Deal, a tyrannical, plutocratic, communist program for a Jewish collectivist state. This is really laying it on the line. Roosevelt broke every promise he had made and did the exact opposite of what he had promised, just like Wilson, right? I propose to you that the government, big and little, be made solvent, and that the example set by the president, Roosevelt, swore to reduce the cost of government operations 25%. Did he do that?
No such thing.
No. The New Deal was a vast increase in the size of government.
The Jew deal.
That's right. Was he lying? Oh, yes. From 1933 to 1936, government expenditures skyrocketed up 83%. He confiscated the gold and made it practically illegal for Americans to own gold, doubling the price. Remember, how does the Constitution define a dollar?
In terms of gold.
Gold and silver, yes. He took the wealth from Americans and put it into the Jews' hands. Banks were shut down en masse, and after only a few months, this New Deal, or more precisely, the Jew Deal, as you correctly named it, was such an utter failure that it had to be revamped in an attempt to salvage the program, and all this while the White House was being turned into a whorehouse.
My textbook says the Great Depression was mostly caused through overproduction and farming and factories.
Right.
They called it the Plague of Plenty. They said that too many goods were available and prices, basically prices just went through the floor.
Well, yeah, the prices go down because of overproduction. But the real cause of the Depression was simply the Fed removed the money supply. They called in all the debts of the people on Wall Street and failed to issue more debt. They failed to give out more loans, and they basically contracted the money supply. Well, how are you supposed to buy anything if there's no money? That's the real cause of the Depression, and it was totally controlled by the Jews. In fact, Joseph P. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's father, was tipped off by a Jew that the Fed was going to contract the money supply, and he was warned to get out of the stock market before the crash. And a few days later, it did indeed crash.
Well, unfortunately, most Americans weren't warned.
No, most Americans were not warned. Yes. Roosevelt, again, just like Woodrow Wilson, Roosevelt was a promiscuous man both before and after he got polio. He was preoccupied with his moral weaknesses, having affair after affair. This is only one side of the coin. On the other side, you have Eleanor, the bisexual lesbian, engaged in all manner of perverted escapades. Sort of reminds you of a recent American president, doesn't it? Billary, right? Huey Long, an accomplished orator and statesman, had pointed out many of the fallacies of Roosevelt and the Jew deal, and many people were starting to listen. Roosevelt had become alarmed at the up-and-coming man who was affectionately known as Kingfish, and was terrified at the prospect of Mr. Long becoming a presidential candidate. He knew that the Jews could not control all the strings in such an election, should it in fact take place, due to Long's immense popularity. FDR made several indirect threats, which included threatening to have Kingfish killed. Long was fully aware of Roosevelt's plans, and this was part of the reason he asked for his broadcast of March 7, 1935, to be put in the congressional record on March 12 of the same year. In the broadcast, he stated, quote, "It has been publicly announced that the White House orders of the Roosevelt administration have declared war on Huey Long," unquote. Long thought that making this statement a matter of public record would be a deterrent and give him an edge of protection against FDR actually carrying out the threats.
Well,
now we know that Louis...
He was assassinated supposedly by his own guards.
No.
That's what I heard. That
no,
somebody...
no, he was assassinated by a Jew. Okay.
Oh, I heard that one of his guards was co-opted to shoot at him.
Well, it says here, and this is how I understand the story, the Jewish physician Arthur Vidrine knew that two of Louisiana's top surgeons were on their way from New Orleans. He knew they could easily save... Oh, this is after the assassination.
Oh, yeah, I mean, after the shots. I knew about the Jewish doctor. How he was killed in the hospital.
Okay. Oh, I see. Very interesting. But nevertheless, the Jews killed Huey Long.
Certainly.
Okay. So this was another assassination in a long line of Jewish assassinations of Americans to prevent America from having true leadership. Okay.
They didn't want any real populism.
That's right. They assassinated Abraham Lincoln.
Wasn't he shot? Huey Long was shot at least five or six times, wasn't he?
Yeah, right.
Which I thought was odd, since he had two or three bodyguards with him that day.
Yeah, the actual assassin was a Jew by the name of Weiss. Okay, and it says the fanatical Jew Weiss may well have been a patsy, believing that he would simply hospitalize Long while being tried for attempted murder under a new political regime in Louisiana. Now, isn't that kind of what Lee Harvey Oswald claimed? He was a patsy?
And who silenced Oswald?
Yeah, that's right, another Jew.
G. Jacob Rubenstein.
That's right. Rubenstein, otherwise known as Jack Ruby. Okay. So assassination politics is a carryover from ancient Judea, because Herod, when he became was in competition with Hyrcanus II, had Hyrcanus II killed. He assassinated Hyrcanus II, who was the rightful heir to the throne of Judah, okay? And then he proceeded to assassinate the entire Sanhedrin, which was at that time still composed of true Judahites, and replaced the entire Sanhedrin with his Edomite cronies, imported them from Idumea, and this was the true beginning of the Jewish Sanhedrin.
And by the time of Jesus, they're absolutely wicked. He had nothing positive to say about any of the Sanhedrin.
Oh, absolutely not. I think you had some quotations from Matthew 23 to that effect to prove the case that, you know, that these evil Jews, evil Edomites, were not, in fact, promoting the religion of Moses, but, in fact, they called it the tradition of the elders.
And he said that where I go, you cannot follow. He didn't say where I go, you will not follow, as though because of what you're doing, you will not follow. He said cannot, as in you're prohibited from following. There's
right.
Nothing you can do because you're not going there.
Yes, yes. And so whenever the Jews are allowed to work behind the scenes, our people are destroyed. That's simple history. That's the fact of the matter. Now, another interesting parallel between Old Testament, or I should say intertestamental times, and America, and of course this has been true of every white nation that the Jews have infested, okay, was before the intertestamental period, our people never had any moneylenders. There was no organized institution of money. We had a system of sacrifices, okay, but it wasn't until the Edomites and their Babylonian counterparts began selling doves and other birds and other animals and making a profit off of them, the money changers. There were no money changers in Israel before these Edomites came in.
Why would there have been?
Right, there wasn't, because there wasn't any money lending establishment. This is purely Edomite Jewish. True Israel never had any money lenders. Okay? So what happened between the Old Testament and New Testament? This is why the Apocrypha have been deleted from our Bibles, so that we can't figure out who these moneylenders are. They're not Israelites. They're Edomites. And what did Jesus say? You distort the word of Yahweh by your tradition. You make a mockery of Moses by your tradition. And the Judeo-Christian pastors refuse to inform the Christian faithful of these abuses by the Jews. I mean, the four Gospels are nothing but one long excoriation of the Edomites and their religion, right? Judaism. Yet very few pastors will ever quote from the New Testament where it criticizes the Jews for their role in money lending, in distortion of the Old Testament law of Moses, and for their execution of our Lord and Savior, Yahshua, Jesus Christ. Okay? They're always covering, making excuses for the Jews. Why? Because the Jews have them in their pocket.
My textbook mentions that FDR outlawed the private ownership of gold. It lasted approximately a year. And then in 1934, February, the policy came to an end when he allowed a limited holding of national gold for international trade only, so that he allowed a limited return to the gold standard, but only for international trade. Yeah,
right.
Because the Rothschilds overseas wanted to be paid in gold. They didn't want green paper.
Right. And the American people were given a low price for their gold, and as soon as the Jews got control of it, the price went up by $10 an ounce, right? So they made an immediate $10 profit per ounce. Okay? Money changers. Right? Money changers.
Certainly.
Same thing, okay? Matthew chapter 23, verse 13, he's speaking to these Edomite Jews. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, neither allow you them that are entering to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. therefore you shall receive the greater damnation. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you compass sea and land to make one proselyte to their religion, right? Not to Christianity, of course.
They certainly don't want our people entering the kingdom because they can't
enter
the kingdom.
That's right. That's their ultimate goal. By destroying our race, they destroy our religion too. And they hope to deprive Yahweh of his people Israel. Okay? And if they can deprive Yahweh of his people Israel, they can forestall the judgment day, right? And they can forestall the kingdom, but it ain't happening. They're not going to accomplish their aim, because the Bible predicts that their empire will be overthrown, and the second coming will guarantee that. Okay? So ultimately, we did, just as Herod was a full-blown Edomite, we Americans finally did have a full-blown Edomite in the White House, and his name was Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Well, I'd say Roosevelt.
Well, Roosevelt, he had a lot of Jewish blood.
I mean, if you look at him, he looks like he's just some Eastern Jew that came right out of the ghetto.
Yeah, he got his Jewish blood from the, from the Delano family. Okay, So he was a half-breed. But Dwight D. Eisenhower, when he was in the military, I think at West Point.
It says the terrible Swedish Jew.
He was known as the Swedish Jew, right?
Terrible Swedish Jew.
The terrible Swedish Jew, okay? And
Tens of millions of Germans would find out just how terrible.
Just how terrible. He hated Germans. Eich the Kike, yes. He absolutely hated Germans. Why would he hate Germans? Okay. Well, because the Jews hate the Germans, because the Jews are primarily the tribe of Judah.
And they don't want Judah to rise up and take back what's been usurped.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And the Franklin, the FDR administration is just riddled with Jews, from top to bottom. And as I said earlier, most of these Jews were not even American citizens.
They were all communists from the Soviet Union.
Exactly. The Jews that came from before it was Soviet Russia, but from the Pale, starting in the 1890s, and there were 20 years of heavy Jewish immigration from the Pale to America, 90% of these Jews were communists.
I have a book here, The Conquest of a Continent by Madison Grant, from a census of the supposedly white population of 1920. Shall I go ahead and read a few numbers?
Sure.
Poland, 3.6 million. Russia, 2.1 million. Czechoslovakia, 1.6 million. Austria, 976,000. Hungary, 703,000. Yugoslavia, 440,000. Lithuania, 293,000. Romania, 185,000. Latvia, 144,000. Then he says, it must be remembered that these figures showed national origin, not racial. The numbers credited to such countries as Poland, Russia, and Austria-Hungary therefore include very large proportions of Jews.
Right.
Since I guarantee you 144,000 farmers in Latvia can't just get up, sell their farm, and move to the U.S.
Yes.
You're not going to see 1.5 million Czechs just packing up and leaving the country that they've been in for the last 2,000 years and coming to the U.S.
Yes. And since FDR was nothing but a Jewish puppet, working for both the Zionists and the communists, and at that time, and even today, the Zionists pretend to be anti-communists, but they're really two blades of the pincers that are destroying Christian civilization everywhere, okay? The Jews have financed communism from the very beginning. It's always been a Jewish enterprise, okay? So that any Jew who pretends that communism is not Jewish is simply a liar. Their own writings admit it. Okay?
They know better.
Yeah, and Henry Ford understood that too. Okay, he revealed that the Jewish bankers of America were financing the Bolshevik Revolution, and many politicians understood that in those days. But there was nothing they could do about it because FDR and his coterie of Jewish Zionists and communists had taken control of the country. And as we see, they assassinated Huey Long.
And they put hundreds of people in prison for speaking out against World War II.
That's right. Yeah, but he couldn't kill, who was the flyer, Lindbergh?
Charles Lindbergh.
Charles Lindbergh openly spoke out against Jewish promotion of World War II. He advised American people not to fall for this Jewish trick. And guess what happened? He didn't assassinate Lindbergh, but what happened to his
child?
Yeah.
And wasn't the main suspect a Jew?
No, it was a German, but he was set up.
Hmm.
It was the Jews who kidnapped Lindbergh's son, and they blamed Hauptmann, the German national, for it. And, you know, they pinned the charge on him, okay?
If he had been a Jew, he suddenly would have become a German.
Right. Right, exactly. So we have, and the main advisor to FDR was Bernard Baruch. Bernard Baruch was the main architect of the FDR administration. It followed through with, and of course, now we have World War One under Wilson being advised by Jews. We have World War Two under FDR being advised by Jews. We have the Korean War with Truman inheriting the same coterie of Jewish advisors.
And Truman himself was a Jew.
Yes, he was. Harry Solomon Truman, his middle name is. Solomon. He was definitely.
Didn't he say that the S didn't mean anything and it was just S?
Right.
That's what he tried to claim, that it was Harry S. Truman and that he had no middle name.
No, that's Solomon. Solomon is S-A-L-O-M-O-N, I believe he said.
And that's how the Jews spell it.
Yes, right. And
all of his early business partners were Jews. I believe Truman was born in Missouri, correct?
Yes. He claimed he was a farmer.
Supposedly. He joined the Klan, I think, in his early 20s,
mm-hmm.
but he quit when he found out that they were hostile to Jews.
Okay, right.
Since he was heavily dependent on campaign contributions for his local political campaign
from
Jewish businessmen.
Right.
Didn't want to offend them, so he demanded his money back, his investigation money.
Right. His patriotism ceased where his wallet began, right?
Oh, he didn't quit because he thought that their stance against blacks was wrong. He later used blacks with the civil rights when he integrated the army during the Korean War.
Right.
But he quit when he found out, you guys don't like Jews. Well, I can't have that because I need their money.
Right. Yeah, so we have another war by a Jew-promoted president, Harry Truman, the Korean War. Okay? Now, these Jews always pretend to be peaceniks. Right? But again, it's more pretense.
We've never had a year of peace when they're at the helm.
That's right. No, there's never peace when Jews are running our governments. And then Dwight D. Eisenhower, another Jew, you know, taking money from Jews. He's the one who literally murdered 2 million Germans after the war by failing to provide them with sanitary conditions in the prison camps after World War II.
The prison camps were just basically fenced off fields.
That's right, without any food or supplies or shelter.
And they would even shoot at women that tried to throw food over the fence.
That's right. That's right. This
so those were the real concentration camps.
And
look at Auschwitz. Auschwitz had a swimming pool, a theater, a hospital, barracks.
Mm-hmm.
They were heated, insulated. They had food and water. Auschwitz was a 5-star hotel compared to the camps the German prisoners were
sent to. Yeah. And so, you know, this era of our history is totally blacked out by the Jewish-controlled textbook industry, the Jewish-controlled history industry, the Jewish-controlled media and universities. You will not hear a word of this, and I'd be surprised if that is mentioned in your textbook.
I think there's a paragraph about Stalin and how he had his own agenda,
uh-huh.
and Roosevelt and Churchill couldn't trust him, but they fail to mention that Stalin killed 30 to 40 million people.
Right.
That must be in the next edition.
Maybe in the upcoming edition, the truthful edition, you know. Where the true facts are maintained, right? And so it was under Eisenhower that our involvement in the Bay of Pigs began, okay? It was under Eisenhower that our involvement in Vietnam began.
They say that Roosevelt's administration bolted the door against large numbers of Jewish refugees.
That's plain nonsense. Yeah.
And military commanders declined even to bomb the rail lines that carried victims to the camp.
it's just Jewish propaganda, you know. It's the absolute Jewish propaganda. The Jews were in total control of the entire theater. They controlled the communist side and they controlled the Allied side. And who won World War II?
The Jews.
The Jews. That's right. Both the communist Jews on the Eastern Front and the capitalist Jews on the Western Front. And Patton began to figure this out toward the end of the war. And he wanted the American government to allow him to go and attack the Russians, the communists, because he knew that if they weren't stopped in their tracks right then, then, you know, communism would take over the world. That was his great fear. And he was right, wasn't he? We have communism today, even here in America. It's called change.
They also misquote Hitler, saying the victor will never be asked to be told the truth, and that society and people more easily fall for a big lie than a small one.
That's right.
He wasn't talking about how to deceive people, though. He was talking about how people are deceived. He wasn't saying, ha, 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 I'm going to deceive people, and it's great for me that they fall prey to the big lie. He was talking about how people fall prey to the big lie because they can't conceive that anybody would have the audacity to tell such a lie.
Right. Well, the big lie is that God, the Jews are God's chosen people. Right?
That is
that's a really big lie.
For the Jew?
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, he was describing
big lies. They say he didn't exist. We evolved from pond scum, you name it. There are plenty of big lies out there.
Yes. And so from the Bay of Pigs and our involvement in the war in Vietnam, our initial stages were begun under Eisenhower. Kennedy inherited both situations. He raked the CIA over the coals because they were promoting this war without the commander-in-chief having any control of it, right? And then he tried to disengage us from Vietnam. He issued paper money, gold-backed paper money, the Kennedy gold-backed notes under Executive Order 1110, okay, that would compete with Federal Reserve notes but would actually be backed by gold. And with all of these, and then he also opposed the Jews getting the nukes. You know, he had this behind-the-scenes conflict with David Ben-Gurion because the Israeli state wanted to have access to our nuclear technology. So
and they were allowed to.
And they were allowed to. Thanks to who? Lyndon Baines
Johnson,
who was
one of the reasons Kennedy had to go.
That's right. That's right. That's
And I found a little blurb about Stalin in the context. It says that Spanish rebels who rose against the left-leaning Republican government in Madrid were headed by fascistic General Francisco Franco, generously aided by his fellow conspirators, Hitler and Mussolini. He undertook to throw the established loyalist regime, which in turn was assisted on a smaller scale by the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
That's all they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the reality is that Bolshevism is nothing but Jewish communism.
Then they say that many Americans, especially Roman Catholics, went to help the communists in Spain. Why doesn't it mention that most of them were Jews?
Right. Right.
And they say that Hitler and Mussolini were conspirators with Franco to overthrow the popularly elected Spanish communist government.
Right, right. Yeah, it's blatant nonsense. They have rewritten history to make themselves look good, as they always do.
If people want to hear what really happened, they should listen to the series of programs Bill and I did about what happened in Spain.
Right, right. Yeah, because it was Jewish intrigue, European intrigue, Jewish intrigue in Europe is the true history of Europe. And one of the reasons why our founding fathers advised us to stay out of Europe's affairs was
they didn't want the Jews coming over here and wrecking our affairs.
Exactly, because they knew that the Jewish moneylenders who controlled the fate of Europe would also finagle their way into our government and take control of our government as well, as Benjamin Franklin correctly prophesied. Okay, so there's simply no doubt about that our U.S. Constitution was instituted to combat the evils of Jewish globalism. Okay? There's no doubt about this. And it was established as a Christian institution, and it was designed to keep all those evil people out and prevent them from taking over our government. That's why it has taken them 200 years to, destroy our Constitution and pretend to be the liberal purveyors of it while they're actually subverting it. Okay, exactly as they did in ancient Judea, as they pretended to be the purveyors of the law of Moses while they were actually subverting it. Okay, so this is how the Jews finagle their way into our confidence. Usually they come in as moneylenders. Sometimes they come in as racketeers. Sometimes they come in as, war profiteers, whatever means they can to get involved in our nations. Once they get their foot in the door, then they proceed to pervert all of our institutions. It's just like the Department of Education. You look at the education unions. They're all run by Jews. That's why our government now teaches communism, instead of republicanism. Okay? That's why he teaches feminism and homosexuality instead of biblical law. All right? They pervert everything they touch. It's simply the fact of the matter. And so after Kennedy, LBJ, who was also part Jewish, and he had a lot of business dealings with Jews. He was a devout Zionist, a 100% devout Zionist. We had the USS Liberty cover-up.
And he knew exactly what was going on.
He knew exactly, and he ordered everybody to shut up about it. There's no doubt about it. So, again, we have another president. I believe Kennedy was... Kennedy probably had the least number of Jewish advisors of any of our presidents in recent history. But he did have some infiltrators such as Robert Strange McNamara and a few others, because when McNamara was done destroying America via the Vietnam War, he was promoted to the World Bank, right? You did such a good job destroying America, now we'll have you destroy the world, right? Because it's all subterfuge. It's all subterfuge, okay? And LBJ was the ace in the hole, the joker in the deck that the Jews had, just in case Kennedy got out of line, they would get rid of him and LBJ would take his place. And what did LBJ do as soon as he assumed office? He got rid of Executive Order 11110, thereby eliminating any competition for the Federal Reserve note.
Kennedy was going to have Treasury notes backed by silver, and
exactly.
LBJ didn't want that.
Exactly, exactly. And also, he escalated the war in Vietnam, and he took all those CIA people, which Kennedy had fired, and put them back in their positions. Okay, so he undid everything that Kennedy tried to do. And because he was also working for the Jews, okay? Now, I think JFK learned from his father, Joseph P. Kennedy, because Joseph P. Kennedy, even though he was in league with the Jews during World War I and he was part of Murder Incorporated, he was basically the booze runner for Meyer Lansky and Eugene Meyer, okay? So he made all his money on Prohibition. Okay, and running booze during Prohibition. That's how he became a millionaire. And, of course, he got tipped off not to, to take his money out of the stock market just before the crash. So he was a very rich man, but as time went on, he became disillusioned with the Jewish establishment and turned against them while he was ambassador to Britain. He decided, I'm not liking what these Jewish moneylenders are doing to America and doing to Europe, okay? And I'm sure he transferred this knowledge to all of his sons, except possibly Ted. Either that or Ted Kennedy wasn't listening, and or they paid Ted Kennedy more than he was willing to refuse, and he became a Jewish puppet as well, okay?
Discussing World War II, this textbook doesn't even get into Roosevelt's Declaration of War speech, probably because that would beg the issue of why did Japan feel so pushed back into a corner that they felt they had no alternative other than to attack the American Pacific Fleet.
That's right. Well, that war was arranged for us by the international Jews. And Roosevelt was using the attack by the by the Japanese as a backdoor entrance into attacking Germany because they were allies.
It does discuss that there was a naval war going on in 1940 against Germany and that Hitler ordered U-boats to attack American ships only in self-defense.
Right, okay.
They even mention that. It certainly doesn't mention Hitler's Declaration of War speech on the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very
good. He addressed all the points. He referred to Roosevelt as a Mason and said that the Freemasons had been instigating a war and that they would look for any international affair and blow it out of proportion.
Yeah. And so, of course, LBJ, being himself at least 1/16th Jewish and having been involved with Jewish racketeers his whole life.
No world war with the Com Bloc.
Right, right. But the Vietnam War was nothing but a Jewish effort to destroy America from within, because while our men were and women were over in Vietnam, losing their lives on behalf of a supposed war against communism.
They were wrecking the culture in the country and handing it over to
exactly.
the communists.
And that was, who's doing that? Jewish activists.
So they say that we have to oppose communism and the jungles of Vietnam where it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meanwhile, we're going to put all the professors into the colleges that are all communists, and we're going to send all the kids there to get brainwashed by the communists.
That's right. That's right. Jewish communism being sold under the guise of integration.
And progressivism.
Civil rights, progressivism.
Peace, love, happiness.
Drug culture. I mean, that was all part of it, you know. It's just like the age differentiation, too. You know, the war between the younger generation and the older generation. The older generation.
Class warfare and generational warfare.
Yes, yeah. The older generation was made to look stupid because they didn't do acid, right?
And all those people experimenting with acid, it's a shame they didn't experiment with cyanide.
That's right, right. Or with the truth.
Don't come back.
Or with the truth, right? And so then, who was Nixon's major Jewish advisor?
Kissinger, obviously.
That's right.
And I think that was his only one, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kissinger was his main advisor. But here we have another Jewish Zionist communist. Kissinger was in the employ of the communists during World War II. Okay? So here another Jewish communist turned Zionist. Okay? And he was always a both. And even Trotsky was always a communist and a Zionist at the same time. Most people don't realize that the two are the same thing. It's just one promotes Jewish capitalism. The other promotes Jewish communism, okay? And then Ford, a 33rd degree Mason, also had Kissinger as his advisor. What about Carter?
I don't know much about the Carter.
Yeah, well, he retained Kissinger as advisor. So the same Jewish advisor, they come with both Democratic and Republican administrations.
So they have no party loyalties.
Right.
But there really is no two party. It's just one party.
Right, right. And in the case of Ronald Reagan, we have we have more crypto Jews in the Reagan administration than full-blown Jews, okay? But certainly in his second term, and after the assassination attempt, which I believe was staged by George H.W. Bush, okay, on Reagan's life, he became, under the influence of several doctors, and his astrologer wife, okay? And whatever conservative rhetoric that Reagan got elected under, he pretty much undid it in the second term.
Well, he said that government is not the solution, government is the problem, and then he proceeded to triple the size of the government.
That's right. That's right. So, again,
he was either a huge hypocrite who just said whatever he had to say to get elected, or someone was twisting his arm.
Yeah. Yeah, and so again, if they weren't outright Jews in his administration, they were people working for the Jews. And, you know, there's times when the Jews can be open about their Jewishness, and there's times when they can't, okay? And so right now, it is a time when they can be open about their Jewishness. But what a lot of people don't realize is that Earl Warren, who sat, who convened the Warren Commission, and whitewashed the Kennedy assassination investigation. He was actually a rabbi.
And today is the era of the Jew, basically.
That's right. So in those days, it was crypto-Jews pretending to be American patriots, but today they're out in the open like Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod. And Rahm Emanuel, the son of a Jewish terrorist, Israeli terrorist, and David Axelrod is the grandson of Leon Trotsky. Okay? These are the type of people who are running America today. Of course, things got no better with the Clinton administration and the two Bush administrations, and now, of course, the so-called Obama presidency. Okay? So we have nothing but Jewish puppets running this country for the last century, except for two or three minor exceptions. Okay? It's nothing but the Judean parallels are absolutely right on the money, the exact same way that the Edomites took control of ancient Judea. They have done the same thing to America and virtually every other formerly white nation, okay? So the Jews themselves, the Edomites in ancient Judea, only had four or five kings of Judea before Yahweh in his great mercy took the Roman army to destroy the temple, which at that point was totally controlled by Edomites, okay? Because the true Judahites and Benjamites and Levites who were still loyal to our race, and our people had left. Okay, and we see today, even today, an exodus of white people from nations in which the Jews have taken total control. Okay, but now that Britishers, who have this influx of Arabs and blacks and Muslims, etc., and they're even accepting Sharia law now in Britain, they're leaving for Australia and New Zealand to get away from the Jewish influx. It's Jews instigating these people to immigrate into, and it's a fulfillment of prophecy that when the flood of aliens comes into our nations, we know that the time is right. We're near the time of the end, and that's what we're seeing right now.
Most British people that are genuine patriots, they want to quit the country because Britain's not Britain anymore.
It's not British,
and they can't take it back.
Yeah, and the Queen is really absolutely powerless with respect to the House of Rothschild.
British royals are Jews.
Well, I know you have a theory that Jewish blood infiltrated in there. It may be right.
Through the mother of George IV,
okay.
Charlotte of Mecklenburg-Strelitz.
Right.
One of her ancestors, I think, her great-great-great-grandmother was part Moorish. So I say that's where the Jewish blood came in.
Okay.
They said that her great-great-great-grandmother, who was the daughter of a Moor and possibly a crypto-Sephardic Jewish concubine.
Now, even if that's the case, it does not invalidate the prophecy that a son of David would always sit on the throne of the house of Israel somewhere, because we still have a royal house, I think, in Sweden and a couple of other nations, but they're in danger of being mongrelized too.
I believe that the royal house, and it's either Monaco or Luxembourg, one of those countries, the prince has mated with a woman from Mauritania and even married her. So at some point there's going to be a grand duke in Europe who's just an Obama.
right. So, but nevertheless, there's always going to be a pure-blooded Israelite who has a right to the Davidic throne until Shiloh comes.
Okay? Certainly. And,
yes.
You or I have more right to the throne in Britain than the present monarchy, in my opinion.
You may be right. And certainly more right than Prince Charles.
Certainly. He looks like a Jewish usurper.
Look at that hooked nose on him, and you see there's that Mountbatten. That Mountbatten blood.
Isn't he the one that said that he would like to be the king of all of Europe?
Did he say that?
And I think one of them even made a statement that it was either maybe Prince Philip or Charles that said he would like to become a virus and infect Europe.
Yes, yes. And then now the total takeover of America, because the Edomites had taken over the Democratic Party with Wilson. And they have controlled the Democratic Party ever since.
But not at the state levels.
No, not at the state level. I mean, there certain states are in revolt against what's going on in America today.
We saw a huge revolt in 1948 with the revolt against Truman under Strom Thurmond with the States' Rights Democratic Party.
Uh-huh, okay.
I don't know if we're going to see that. I don't think the Tea Party is a modern incarnation of the old states' rights movement. I think the Tea Party is controlled opposition.
Yeah, it may be now. Yeah, and they're definitely trying to control the Tea Party movement, which is basically a rebellion against the phony economics of the Federal Reserve, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But not, even those people don't say anything about Jewish control of the Federal Reserve. So they're close to the truth, but they don't know the real truth, right? That the problem is Jewish infiltration of our civilization. And, the banking element, the FDR, is just part of the problem. The problem is much worse than the FDR. It's all of these Jews, the Fed. The problem is all these Jews who have taken total control of virtually every government office that we have. Virtually every single one, including the FBI, the CIA. They're trying to control our military. The ADL is using all of its power and influence to control the police departments around the country, okay, and turn them against America, turn them against the Constitution. So there's nothing, I can't think of one thing that the world Jews are doing that's good for anybody but their own people. They're simply wrecking Western civilization with all of their evil, usury, tyranny, stage-managed wars, promoting abortion, promoting the sexual revolution. Everything they do is nothing but evil. I can't think of one good thing they do. Can you?
Well,
it's all
they
evil.
They help God figure out who's on his side and who's on the beast side, although he basically already knows that. But if you think about it today, people are free to be as degenerate and disgusting as they want. They can go out and race mix. There's no societal pressure. There are no laws against it.
Right.
So, you know, 80 years ago, someone may have wanted to race mix, but they knew they couldn't do it legally and they couldn't do it or else they'd be ostracized. Today,
right.
The degenerates who really hate God, they're free to go be a degenerate.
Well,
so they're basically painting targets on themselves.
That's right.
The battle lines are being drawn.
That's right. The battle lines are being drawn. I remember in the 50s, the term white trash was applied to a white woman who would fraternize with men of other races, usually because she became addicted to some drug or another. Okay,
and they were her connection.
And they were her connection, right.
So not only did she pollute her body with drugs, she polluted her body by laying with them.
That's right. That's
and compounded the problem.
Yeah. And so the Republican Party was not infiltrated until way late, like it was in the late 1940s. The Chicago Tribune was the last major newspaper to succumb to Jewish influence. Colonel, I can't think of his name right now, the former owner of the Chicago Tribune, when it was the world's greatest newspaper.
Well,
right?
Hasn't the Republican Party pretty much been rotten from the get-go? It was founded on the ideas of abolitionism and starting a civil war.
Oh, well, yeah, despite that, they weren't infiltrated by Jews, you know, like the Democratic Party was. You know, there was true conservatism. You know, and the Republican Party killed the League of Nations, okay? So the Republican Party wasn't controlled by the Jews to the, and certainly not to near the extent it controlled the Democratic Party. But after World War II, they took control of the Republican Party too, okay? And that increased gradually through the Reagan years and also with the neocons under the two Bushes. Okay.
Certainly, and they've been some of the worst presidents we've ever had.
Oh, yeah, the last crop of presidents, the last four or five presidents have been absolutely the worst, although I still consider FDR to be the absolute worst president that America has ever had because he's the one who ensconced all these Zionist communist Jews in the New Deal. And he increased the size of the Supreme Court from 7 to 9, right, and added two more communists to the Supreme Court.
I think we already had 9, but he tried to increase it. He wanted to increase it, I think, to 12 or 15 when they wouldn't go along with the Jew deal.
Okay, right. Okay. So everything FDR did was nothing but Zionist and or communist. Everything he did. You know, and it was all dictated by his Jewish handlers, primarily Bernard Baruch. And then, of course, Henry Morgenthau was the one who devised the airlift. And, you know, the Jews basically carved Europe up between the communists and the capitalists. And they couldn't take control of France and Britain on the scale of communism that they did Eastern Europe. But they had another war plan. World War III is yet to come. Okay? And Albert Pike predicted that World War III would be a conflict between Christianity and Islam.
Well, they better be careful what they wish for because they might just get it and it might just be the War of Armageddon.
That's right. Well, it's going to be. It's going to be. But, see, it's not one of those things where, you know, when you institute full-scale war, you never know where those bombs are going to land, right? And one of those bombs may just land on the House of Rothschild in London.
Or Tel Aviv.
Or Tel Aviv. There you go. Okay? Because this last war is going to backfire. But nevertheless, it's not something that's really totally in their control because the Federal Reserve note as an international currency is collapsing. And they're trying to figure out how to prop it up. And the euro has not been the answer. That has not been the answer for Europe. And the Amero won't be the answer for America either because it's all phony paper money. It's all new money.
They're not intending the Amero to save our nation, save our economy, or stabilize the currency. They're intending the Amero to enslave us.
Right, right. And so they're instituting more and more tyranny. They're absolutely throwing the U.S. Constitution out. None of the government, none of the federal government follows any provision of the U.S. Constitution anymore.
They have us believe since our economy has some problems, we should merge with Mexico. That's like telling someone who's getting C's in math, here, you should study with this F student.
Yes, yes. So it's very obvious from what happened in ancient Judea, the Jews, the Edomite Jews, took control of our society then. They murdered Christ. And don't let anybody tell you that the Romans murdered Christ. It was the Jews who were... John 7:1, and Jesus would not walk in Jewry because the Jews sought to kill him. It was the Jewish Pharisees who instigated the trial against him, which was illegal. They didn't follow Mosaic law. They made up their own law to suit themselves at the time, right?
You know, there was a History Channel documentary on a while ago about who killed Jesus, and they were trying to say that Pontius Pilate was a bloodthirsty Roman governor, and that the first century Christians inserted the thing where Pilate said, I am innocent of this man, blah, 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 and his wife having the dream, and then the Roman centurion saying, surely this man was the Son of God, to try and make Christianity more palatable for the Romans.
Yeah. So now I just want to draw a couple of final parallel comparisons between ancient Judea and America and actually the entire world. Okay.
But one thing, though. What was it that the Jews said, his blood be on us and our children?
That's right.
And what was it? Sarah Silverman said, we killed him and we're proud of it, and if we could kill him again, we would.
That's right.
And
she's actually not joking. Matthew 27:25. Exactly.
She's not kidding.
Right. Yeah, she's not kidding. She's not joking. And but the Jews of the ADL and other, you know, worldwide powerful, sick, slick Jews prevented that line from being in the movie, of being spoken in the movie, you know, The Passion of the Christ. And they demanded that he take that line. But it was still said in Aramaic.
But they didn't subtitle it.
Right, but they didn't subtitle it.
How many Americans speak Aramaic?
Yes, exactly. So the Jews got their way, and they forced that line to be taken out of the movie. You know,
don't they pretty much always get their way?
Well, of course they always get their way, because they have the money, the power, and they can assassinate you if you don't go in line with them, okay? As many of our presidents have suffered assassination thanks to the Jewish moneylenders. There's simply no doubt about this, okay? So the final resolution in Judea was when the Roman army sacked the temple and drove the Jews out and scattered the Jews. Now, of course, our people, the true Israelites, were scattered 800 years earlier in 745 B.C. And then a large contingent of Judahites and Benjamites were added to that true dispersion of Israel. The Jewish dispersion did not happen until, you know, 800 years later. And that's when, you know, the Roman army, which was a partial fulfillment of the judgment predicted in Genesis 3:15, that, we would bruise their head, okay? And the head of the Jews was bruised in Judea, in the time when the Roman army, you know, took control and kicked Jew butt in 70 A.D., okay? But that just scattered the problem. That just scattered the infection, right? There's a saying among those who know cancer really well that the worst thing you should do, the worst thing you can do is to burst open a cancerous tumor, because that will make it spread. Okay, all you ladies who get mammograms and they push your breast real hard against that machine, if you've got cancer, that machine is going to guarantee that it's going to spread and you will get sicker. You will not get well. Well, that's what happened, because the Jewish disease spread all over the world from there, primarily to Europe and Africa. And,
following the trade routes of the Roman Empire.
Right, because they always go, the Jews always live in the cities. They congregate in the city so they can control trade.
And they're all merchantmen.
They're all merchants. Whether it's a form of banking, whether they're haberdashers, or whether, you know, they have pawn shops, or whether they're selling human flesh. You know, they're always merchants. Okay? And so, you know, when you look at actual history and you see what the Jews have done to our people, millions upon millions upon millions of true Israelites have been slaughtered by the international Jew. And yet, all we hear about is the fable of the 6 million in World War II, you know? And then they claim that gives them the right to attack the Palestinian people, who never heard a single Jew in the last 2,000 years. right? So another, according to Jewish logic, if a German punches me in the face, I get to kick a Palestinian, right?
Well, was it that one rabbi said that a million Arabs aren't worth a Jewish fingernail?
That's right. That's the real Jewish religion. Yes, yes. So now, what's taking place? On the world scale, you take the situation in Judea 2,000 years ago and bring it up to date to our worldwide mystery Babylon, kingdom of Jewish communism and capitalism. And true capitalism is not money lending. True capitalism under the American system says that the government is supposed to protect American industry. That's how America became great during our first 100 years. Jewish capitalism is gaining control of the money supply and issuing their money for us in our name. That's Jewish capitalism. Of course, the Constitution forbids that. It also forbids paper money. But the Jews don't care. They will lend us whatever we will accept from them, right? Whether it's plastic, paper, or gold and silver. Whatever we choose to accept from them, they control us with it. That's how it works. So now, this final conflict, this resolution on the world stage, the Jews have taken over the entire world just as they took control of Judea 2,000 years ago. Guess what? The second coming. Jesus is coming back to take vengeance upon the assassins 2,000 years ago.
That's what he said, that the kingdom will be taken from them and given to those who bring forth the fruits. They
That's
can't
right.
bring forth the fruits.
That's right.
But
and
they
all,
have to pull in the kingdom. He
yeah.
said that the kingdom suffers from violence and the violent take it with force.
That's
and they
right.
have. They've taken the kingdom.
They've taken the kingdom. And it also fulfills Isaac's prophecy to Esau that he will have dominion in the last days over his brother Jacob. Okay, because we're Jacob and they're Esau. And until our people understand that that's what's really going on, and this is the only, Christian identity is the only theology that makes sense of all these prophecies given to us in the Bible and makes sense of history that corresponds with all these prophecies. Of course, none of the Judeo-Christians even want to discuss these subjects because they know we can run circles around them with their phony theology. And their promotion of war. We're actually the peaceniks today, and they accuse us of being terrorists because we oppose war. Talk about doublespeak, right? A terrorist is somebody who opposes Jewish war. Okay.
You won't get on board with their war of aggression.
Right.
You're saying.
Right. Now, what a ridiculous definition of a terrorist. A terrorist is somebody who wants to kill people. Okay? We're not trying to kill anybody. We're trying to warn people what's really going on. Okay, we only have 5 minutes left before our last session. Bill Fink is going to host it, and you and I are going to be his guests in the panel discussion, and we're going to be talking about the revolutionary war heroes of the American Revolution, namely the Black Robed Regiment, the pastors of the American Revolution, another aspect of history that has been totally blacked out from our history books. Okay, thank you very much, Brian, for participating in this segment with me. We got one more segment to go. I hope everybody's sticking to their fast because the more we fast, the more we become victorious over the Jewish world system. Praise Yahweh. I'll see you in a few minutes.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.